time for the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Lori Boyer. It's a Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report, and Taylor Charlstrom will be in to talk about the regulatory landscape for walnuts. And I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news with regional ag news beginning right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In the latest USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service California Crop Progress and Condition Report, average lows for California and weather ranged from 32 to 64 degrees in the mountains last week, 46 to 77 in the Central Valley, 47 to 66 along the coast, and 50 to 87 in the desert. Average highs for the state range from 47 to 87 in the mountains, 59 to 105 along the coast, 66 to 104 in the Central Valley, and 92 to 115 in the desert. As for fruit crops, the stone fruit season was well underway with early varieties of peaches, nectarines, plums, and apricots being harvested. Irrigation and weed control efforts continued. Apple and pear development was ongoing. Grape and kiwi fruit size continued to increase, and vines were trimmed where necessary. Persimmon trees and pomegranates were steadily developing. Various citrus groves were hedgerowed. Valencia oranges were harvested. Gold nugget mandarins, tangelas, grapefruit, and lemon harvest progressed. And strawberry and blueberry harvests were still underway. Blackberry development has been steady. In the nut crops, some orchard floors were cleaned up and weed control continued where necessary. Irrigation was ongoing. Almond, walnut, and pistachio nut development continued to progress nicely. Small immature nuts continued to develop. In the vegetable crops in Colusa, Sacramento, Solano, and Yolo counties, the organic asparagus harvest finished and the organic cherry tomato harvest will begin at the end of this month. Processing tomato harvest will begin in July. In San Mateo County, greens, broccoli, and cauliflower were harvested. Brussels sprouts were planted. In Stanislaus County, sweet potatoes continue to be transplanted into other fields. Garlic continued to grow. In Tulare County, bell peppers, tomatoes, and other early summer vegetables were harvested and were sold at local fruit stands. A subsidiary of Pinnacle Asset Management-based Viserion International Holdo Company, LLC, inked a definitive agreement to purchase California-based agribusiness Western Milling from its current owner, Kraus Western Incorporated. Western Milling is one of the oldest and most prominent suppliers of mixed-grain cattle feed products to the dairy industry in California. The firm also operates large-scale fertilizer and grain merchandising businesses with a fleet of natural gas-fueled trucks. Its products include complete feeds, blended vitamin-rich feeds, pelleted feeds, rolled grains, branded pet foods, supplements, and other grain commodities. Under the terms of the deal, Viserion Milling LLC will acquire Western Milling's headquarters in Visalia, California, and its locations in Hanford and Famoso, California, Hereford, Texas, and Buckeye, Arizona. Kevin Cruz, outgoing CEO of Western Milling, will serve as executive chairman of Western Milling under the new ownership. The firm's chief financial officer, Chad Pintner, will become the CEO of Western Milling. Napa County's annual report on agricultural crop values showed that most crop values were higher than the previous year, and overall the value of all of its agricultural production is at $745.8 million. That is an increase of $280,336,700 over 2020. According to the report released recently, the contribution of grapes to overall agricultural output of the county is clear. Of the $745.8 million value of all crops produced in the county, the value of the wine grape crop alone came in at $741.7 million. In red wine grape production, the dominant wine crop in the county, the total value of the crop was just under $664 million versus $384 million in 2020. This increase in production value was primarily due to a 21.4% rise in wine grape production and a 32.5% increase in the average price paid for all Napa County wine grape varieties compared to the previous year, according to Tracy Cleveland, County Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer. Reasons for the dramatic year-to-year fluctuation in wine grape values stem from the large dip which occurred in the value of the 2020 harvest. In February of 2020, the preliminary value of the crop from the Napa Valley was $466 million, 51% below the year before. Green Giant, the iconic brand synonymous for vegetables, has announced the new consumer survey results that found that broccoli remains America's favorite vegetable for 2022. The Green Giant brand polled over 5,000 Americans for its annual favorite veggie open-ended survey to determine consumers' favorite vegetables, timed to National Eat Your Vegetables Day, which is coming up on June 17th. Broccoli is again the favorite vegetable in 29 states. Runners-up in order of popularity are corn, carrots, potatoes, and asparagus. According to the Associated Press, a proposal to use up to $1.5 billion to purchase farmers' senior water rights has made its way to the budget negotiations between lawmakers and Governor Gavin Newsom. It comes at a time when 98% of the state is experiencing a severe drought and is part of the larger $7.5 billion water and drought package, which builds a climate-resilient water system. In addition to the buyback program, the package also includes $500 million for the Department of Conservation to use for acquisition and repurposing of lands to implement the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. It includes $1.5 billion to ensure Californians have safe drinking water and also $1.5 billion for drought-resilient water supply grants. Statewide water consumption has increased by 18% in April. Water shortages continue to plague the Golden State. Ocean Mist Farms, a leading grower and marketer of fresh artichokes in the U.S., is pleased to announce Jenny Rivera has joined Ocean Mist Farms as a sales representative. With this hiring, Ocean Mist Farms has brought on an experienced and proven professional. In her new role, Rivera will be responsible for the day-to-day management of key accounts in relation to sales at Ocean Mist Farms. Prior to accepting the position, Rivera served as senior district sales manager at Dole Fresh Vegetables, where she began her career over 12 years ago. She earned her degree at Santa Clara University and Cal State Monterey Bay.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
It's no secret that the walnut industry and the tree nut industry as a whole have been exposed to increasingly overbearing regulations regionally and internationally. Walnut Board and Commission Director of Technical and Regulatory Affairs Josh Rahm explained many of these regulations at last month's California Walnut Conference. Many of the challenges include increasing U.S. supply, shorter shelf life, tariffs, and increased competition, as well as pesticides. The pesticide issue resides on a state, federal, and international level for California walnut growers, and current pesticide-related topics include mancozeb, Section 24C, glyphosate, neonicotinoids, and the European Union's maximum residue levels.
Mancozeb, we've had some developments, and a few things coming up with the EU phasing that out for their growers as of January 4th, 2022. That doesn't have an impact on us as long as there's an MRL established, which there will be for now in the foreseeable future. That's something for this crop year, potentially next year, is something we're going to continue to monitor closely, but good to go there for now. The review, actually, the MRLs actually got pushed back again from the European Commission from April, which is this month, to August or early fall. So we have a little more flexibility there as well before they make a decision, but there's generally some good optimism knowing that this has been pushed back. So we're going to keep fighting to protect and preserve those MRLs. There's a Section 24C special local needs for application of fungicides in orchards with standing water. So CHAMP and diethane, those are going to be available through December 31st, 2025. Glyphosate, that's a popular question that came up in the previous panel with the pesticides. But some good news there, you know, the EPA has concluded that there's no risks of concern to human health when glyphosate is used according to the label. It's not a carcinogen. Overall, there's very little thoughts that glyphosate's going to disappear from ag because of settlements being reached by Bayer. And the growers out here following those label instructions and doing a great job. Now, the EU is under review right now, so something to be mindful of. We watch here and monitor here in the U.S. to see what's going on. Sometimes things pass over and may impact us on that level. there's some optimism in terms of the review, and we just heard from Bear earlier that the optimism may still be present. So we'll keep an eye and ears on that as it concludes here in 2022. But a huge project under review. Neonics, there's been some additional DPR movements, Department of Pesticide Regulation, that have recommended based on studies that this be a restricted use material. So with that being said, it's coming under increased scrutiny, and now there's a legislation, AB 2146, that's been introduced that proposes for this to be non-restricted for ag as well. So definitely imidacloprid is an item of importance for us as an industry, controlling walnut husk fly and other pests, but we want to make sure that we are continuing to be engaged from the EPA reviews, the groundwater detection that DPR found at such a minute level, by the way, that it would be extremely unlikely anything would happen, but it's the fact that it showed up. So we're engaged in helping ensure the science and practicalities of these items are keeping these products available for everyone.
Rom discussed also a number of state regulatory updates for growers to keep an eye on related to chemicals. Those included the 1,3-D dichloropropane risk management directive and chloropicrin label updates, among other pressing issues.
There's a directive from Julie Henderson, the director of DPR, proposing to advance control measures for the application of 1,3-D. And that's going to, quote unquote, reduce potential exposures to those non-occupational bystanders. And that's limiting the 72-hour acute exposure to non-occupational bystanders to 55 parts per billion or less. So what does that mean? I mean, looking at our products available for pre-plant, you know, methyl bromide's gone. Hate to break it to folks, it's not coming back. 1,3-D is a tool we have, and as far as alternatives available, there aren't a whole lot. We continue to invest and look at sustainable alternatives, but as these products continue to become under increased scrutiny, it's the pilot trials by growers. Having the DPR come out to the field and understand and see what's actually going on and how important this is for the industry, and knowing that nematodes just don't take time off because they haven't been sprayed or applied with a 1,3-D product. So there's understanding that there'll be potential webinars and information sessions. It's been pretty quiet in the last couple months. But as far as things coming up and next steps and how that impacts the industry, we'll keep everyone updated. Chloropicrin, another product that the industry uses, of course, is, you know, we've been engaged with the DPR, the California Walnut Commission, and Tri-Cal, ensuring those label amendments of chloropicrin are complete to mitigate additional constraints on growers. So what happened is chloropicrin labels that stated fumigation will be followed by disc, ring roller, land plane, smooth roller, and a cultipacker have been amended and are formally approved by the DPR to state the word or instead of and allowing growers to not need a cultipacker, which there may be a handful in the state, following the field fumigation process. So one word like that has impacted industry members, and we notice things like that and make sure they get corrected to make life a little easier, a little less difficult.
Overall, the California walnut industry has been subjected to increased external pressures, regulatory costs, and burdens. Although the pesticide and chemical issues are more of a wait-and-listen sort of issue, other issues that growers are subjected to in the state can be mitigated through programs and incentives. For more on this information, visit walnuts.org. This is Taylor Charlstrom reporting for My Ag Life.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, working together to advance the industry. Together, we can do more.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news, consumers in the United States returned to pre-pandemic trends, purchasing more food away from home than food purchases intended for consumption at home. USDA's Economic Research Service released the data this week, which shows food away from home spending increased 21.1% in 2021 from the previous year. Food at home spending also increased up 4% in 2021. In 2020, during a COVID-19 pandemic, real total food expenditures fell 6.6% from 2019. U.S. consumers as food spending patterns changed as efforts were made to limit the spread of COVID-19, which included stay-at-home orders. Food away from home spending decreased by 15.8% in 2020, while food at home spending increased by 3.9%. In 2021, real total food expenditures increased 12.2% from 2020. USDA describes food at home as food intended for off-premise consumption from retailers and food away from home as food consumed at outlets such as restaurants or cafeterias. Clean Fuels Alliance America Chief Executive Officer Donnell Rehagen welcomed news that Chevron finalized its acquisition of Renewable Energy Group, a longtime Clean Fuels Alliance America member. As the acquisition is finalized, Chad Stone of Renewable Energy Group will continue to lead the Clean Fuels Governing Board as chair. Rehagen says it is a meaningful acquisition for the industry and for the clean fuels industry for many reasons. The company was one of the first to build a biodiesel plant in the United States, with 11 biorefineries in the U.S. and Europe, and more than half a billion gallons of production of biodiesel and renewable diesel. Renewable Energy Group is also one of the Clean Fuels' largest members in terms of fuel production. California-based Chevron has steadily grown its clean fuels business, actively marketing its renewable diesel blend at the pump in California. Renewable Energy Group will remain headquartered in Ames, Iowa, and will focus on growing Chevron's portfolio of lower carbon fuels. While global production forecasts for rice are at record levels, world demand and consumption of rice also remains strong. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain has the story.
World rice production is strong, record strong.
For both the old crop year and the new crop year, we're looking at higher production month over month and an increase in production year over year as well of about 1.7 million metric tons.
With production from India the driver, according to World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski. Also on the rise, commodity use in the 2021-22 marketing year, particularly in India.
They're shifting more of their food assistance program toward providing rice instead of wheat, given the very high prices and tight supplies of wheat, relative abundant supplies of rice.
The tightening of ending stocks for both the old and new rice crop is the result. Yet Jekinowski points out that compared to other commodities, rice supplies
are still fairly abundant.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
U.S. tractor and combine monthly unit sales in May of 2022 fell below the five-year average for the first time since March of 2020, while Canadian sales remained above the line. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers released the monthly data last week, which shows U.S. total farm tractor sales fell 14.5% for the month of May compared to 2021, and U.S. combine sales for the month declined 12.7% to 315 units sold. Total farm tractor sales and combine sales are both down 14.2% year-to-date. In Canada, unit sales fell 11.3% and combine sales fell 28.4%. Year-to-date farm tractor unit sales are down 8.6% in Canada, while harvesters are down 28.1%. AEM's Kurt Blade says supply chain remains a primary issue in the ag equipment market right now. Blade points out another thing to keep in mind, especially when comparing numbers year over year, is 2021 sales were significantly above historic trends. New data shows U.S. ag exports are up in the first quarter of 2022 compared to last year. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more on the top ag product destinations so far this year.
The U.S. Census Bureau this week released first quarter 2022 trade data. Veronica Nye, American Farm Bureau Federation senior economist, says U.S. ag exports are up nearly 13% compared to a year ago.
But if you're like me, you're probably wondering how much inflation is contributing to that increase. So after adjusting for inflation, 22 year-to-date exports are up 4% by value compared to the same period last year. However, when we look at export volumes, the story isn't quite as rosy. Export volumes year-to-date are actually down 4% compared to the same period last year.
Nye says many are closely watching the global supply of corn and wheat.
Despite the estimation that Ukraine's 22-23 wheat export volumes will be down nearly 50% because of war, and U.S. wheat exports are projected to be down 4% due to drought, USDA is actually projecting that global wheat exports will be up a little bit this year. That's mainly based on increased volumes out of Russia. So far, 2022 wheat exports out of the U.S. are weaker than a year ago. U.S. export volumes of corn are estimated down in the current marketing year, mainly related to higher prices.
Beyond corn and wheat, Nye says other U.S. products are enjoying increased exports.
U.S. ethanol exports are up 67% in January through April of 2022 compared to a year ago. Soybean oil is up over 50%. That's likely a result of folks choosing soybean oil as a substitute for sunflower seed oil, which is a major export crop out of Ukraine and Russia. Cotton is also up over 50% by value. Beef and beef products are up also over 38% compared to the same point last year.
Michael Clements, Washington.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Earlier last month, an insect trapper in the Napa Valley was checking traps when he found a western grape leaf skeletonizer moth. As the name of this insect suggests, the metallic blue or greenish-black moth is no friend to grapevines. It is known to eat away all the green matter from grape leaves, leaving behind just the skeleton or the veins of the leaf. In addition to the harm the skeletonizers cause leaves, the larvae are also a menace to farmers. The small spines on the larvae contain hydrogen cyanide, which can cause skin irritation to anyone who comes into contact with the insect's spikes. Napa County Ag Commissioner Tracy Cleveland explained more about why this pest is worth looking at and keeping an eye out for.
It's a defoliating pest of commercial and wild grapevines. It also has other hosts that it favors, including Virginia creeper and Boston ivy. So it's a pretty significant pest. The adult moth, it lays eggs on the undersides of leaves in grapevines. And then those eggs hatch out and the larval stages feed on the grapevines. So hence the name defoliating or skeletonizer. They skeletonize the leaves. So there's, I think, 5 instars, so they'll continuously feed and grow. They can move to the fruit if they completely defoliate the leaves. They're native to the American Southwest, including New Mexico and Colorado, and they were introduced into California in the 1940s, I think. So they're actually established in some areas in California, including the San Joaquin Valley.
When present in large numbers, the moth larvae, known to be voracious feeders, are capable of defoliating vines of entire vineyards. The larvae will move on the grape clusters if the leaves are gone, which can cause rot, according to UC's Integrated Pest Management Program.
That defoliation can create secondary conditions and issues for grape growers, you know, including like delayed fruit maturity, sunburn. If they move to the fruit, then you're talking about bunch rot. So it's not a good pest to have, certainly. So some of the steps that we're taking, for us, the education and outreach is really big. So, you know, once we had the find, we contact the actual property operator, make sure that they know what we found. We talk to them about management and sort of scouting their vineyards. We also do outreach and education with our community and all of our growers, certainly within a square mile of the area, and then the community at large. We want everyone to be aware and to be on the lookout because it's a pest of not just grapevines, but a lot of different hosts. So we want everybody looking. So I think that's the biggest thing is scouting for it. You know, walking through your vines, going into your backyard, lifting up leaves to see if you see any larvae that are feeding, and you can notice damage from the top of the leaf because there'll start to be like holes and kind of that appearance of damage from the top. So that's pretty key. Next steps for us, the outreach and education, my team, we create that 1 square mile perimeter and then we add additional traps. We call it delimitation trapping. So we add 25 extra traps on top of the 200 traps that we already have throughout Napa County. So we have our pest detection trappers checking those traps every 2 weeks. So we're looking to see if there are more and then where they might be located in that general area. I'm happy to say we've checked those traps twice now since the initial find, and we've not had any additional finds. So that's the good news. Chances are good that it's a hitchhiker, you know, on equipment from another area, but it's always good to be vigilant.
Of course, all pests that may or may not be able to cause economic damage are of concern to growers. Cleveland did say that the grape leaf skeletonizer is not of major concern as of right now.
It's really kind of a secondary pest. It's has very effective management guidelines, whereas GWS is a little bit tougher to control. So glassy wing sharpshooter, huge concern for us. Definitely not something we want to see here. Western grape leaf skeletonizer, also a concern for us, but there are a lot of effective control mechanisms, like I said, including biological releases. So, you know, there's a parasitic wasp, there's a parasitic fly, there's a natural granulosis virus that is endemic to the environment, which is very effective at kind of controlling the population in areas where it exists. So that's the good news. And then a lot of, you know, there's chemical control options. So I think I would say that pests or GLS is more manageable.
This is Taylor Charlstrom reporting for MyAgLife.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.